racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Well, guess what? The second major of the year? Well, that's in the history books. New records have been broken. In this episode of In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, we'll dissect the 101st PGA Championship. We'll hear from the winners, PGA Master Professional Youth Coach, and as always, hear whatever opinionated and publisher of MorningRead.com, Alex Maselli, has to say. Hello and welcome. I'm Bob Bupka. Very proud to be here with Jay Randolph Jr., often known as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. Jay, what about Mr. Koepka?
Well, it was a fascinating performance again from a guy that looks pretty unflappable. Now, we did see the stretch of bogeys, but I want to put in perspective, and before the program started, you and I were talking about it. Through 64 holes, this guy had a 7-shot lead. He could have bogeyed his last 6 holes and still won a major championship. The way he won the golf tournament Thursday and Friday, and he put some icing on it on Saturday, and it got interesting there for a moment. If Dustin makes a birdie or two, it becomes quite interesting. But this was, again, another clinic by Brooks Koepka. And for the first time, he looked like a real golfer down the stretch, but also had the fortitude to finish it off and make the putt on 18 to win by 2. Just fascinating stuff, Bob. There's a lot of things to dissect about him. And what a start to the major championship season, this new revamped schedule with the Masters and then the PGA U.S. Open and Open Championship with Tiger Woods winning and Brooks Koepka winning.
And before we even start in on Brooks Koepka, I know you're managing a golf course and you have a trained eye for different facilities, Jay, having played extensively in college and after that. Your initial reaction to Bethpage Black as a championship venue?
You know, leading into the championship, I'd heard all this talk about how wet it was and how long it was going to play. And the thing that I have to realize, and I think everybody has to realize, is long means nothing anymore. I mean, they're all long. They're all so long that it doesn't matter. I thought the rough might have been a little tougher the first couple of days. I guess it grew a little and got tougher. I think Bethpage is a fantastic venue. I think in the end, the final 2 days, they had the golf course where they would have wanted it maybe for 3 of the 4 days because it really played tough. The wind added to it. And that's the other thing. Koepka played during the toughest time on Sunday with that wind up as much as it was. I'm not making any excuses for the falter, but, you know, I've always liked Bethpage. And as you and I talked about last week, and you heard the players continue to say they appreciate the job that Kerry Haig does setting up the PGA Championship.
Yeah, it's amazing. I had an opportunity. Kerry came up to our vantage point where we were broadcasting from, and I asked him if he had a couple of minutes or a couple of things I wanted to run by him. The first thing I asked him, I said, Kerry, after setting up the golf course, did you see a 63 out there? And he said, you know, Bob, you have to take into consideration there was a lot of rain prior to the start of the event. The greens were very receptive. The fairways were soft, so balls weren't running into the rough. And you have the best players in the world. So, yes, you know, there could be a 63, and there certainly was. The interesting part was I said, you know what I'm surprised about, Kerry, and you don't need a response to this. I said, I know if I was head of the USGA many years ago, I would have called you up and I would have said, look, we want you to set up our USGA U.S. Open for us, and we're going to pay you $1 million a year. And he just kind of chuckled. Well, I found out he's making over $1 million a year setting it up for the PGA of America. So my idea, Jay, of getting $1 million for him, he had already achieved that level.
Well, and I think if you'd have asked him, you know, I could kind of understand the 63, but not the buck 28. I mean, 128 is off the charts. I mean, that's a record. There were a lot of records, but I mean, you know, your guy might shoot 63-72 or 63-69, but to go 63-65, it just it sent a big message.
That's a valid point, Jay. One great round, but backing it up like he did. I mean, nobody's ever gotten a 12 under par in a major prior to Brooks doing it. Well, we've talked enough so far. Why don't we give a listen to Brooks's reaction to winning the PGA?
Phenomenal. I think that's a good word. Yeah, I mean, it's been a hell of a run. It's been fun. I'm trying not to let it stop. It's super enjoyable and just try to ride that momentum going into Pebble. I think that's, I mean, 4 of 8. I like the way that sounds. It's been so much fun these last, 2 years? It's pretty close to 2 years. It's incredible. I don't think I even thought I was going to do it that fast. I don't think anybody did. And to be standing here today with 4 majors is mind blowing. Today was definitely the most satisfying out of all of them for how stressful that round was, how stressful DJ made that. I know for a fact that was the most excited I've ever been ever in my life right there on 18.
He tells it like it is, Jay.
Well, he does. He doesn't hide things. He may not be the most exciting soundbite, but he, when it's all said and done, he gives you a little piece of himself, and you know, he right off the bat, the first question that led into his cut there was the fact that he joins Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Ben Hogan, and Tiger Woods. I mean, you heard those 4 names. He now joins them as somebody who has won 4 of 8 majors that they have played in a row. Tiger did it a couple of times. But, I mean, that's tall cotton.
It sure is. And we got a little insight into maybe why he's enjoying so much success, Jay. A clear indication on TV played out of having his priorities straight. Now, we got a camera on him as he got out of his car, walking to the clubhouse to prepare for the round. His model girlfriend reached over to try and give him a little kiss. He kind of shoved her away and kept on walking. Now, immediately after winning and walking off the 18th green, that kiss was okay. So he does have his priorities straight. There's no doubt about that. And we wanted to know how satisfying that win was.
There's a lot of satisfaction for what happened today. This was by far the most stressful. I didn't think Shinnecock was this stressful. It played so hard today. It blew 25, and these fairways are, I don't know, 20, 25 yards wide. I didn't drive it good. Didn't give myself very many chances from the tee. And you do that at Bethpage, you're in for a long day. And I was. I'm just glad. Like I said, I'm glad I've got this thing sitting next to me. It's very satisfying, this one. This was definitely the most satisfying of all the ones I've won.
It'd be tough for him to, tell us which is the most special, because obviously they're all majors, so they're all special.
Well, it's hard to believe. I shouldn't say it's hard to believe, but I'm a little surprised that he said it's his most satisfying. I mean, you know, I think the Belle Reve thing with Tiger in the mix had to be huge. And obviously U.S. Opens, but, you know, this was right after it occurred. And it was the first time where he really had looked suspect, if you will, Bob. I mean, you know, you make that many bogeys in a row, I don't care who it is, you start to wonder. I mean, could this be the moment? And as I said, if Dustin would have made a couple more, birdies rather than a bogey or two, it could have changed everything.
Well, you bring up a good point there. So that leads to the question, did Koepka ever think he would fail?
It was definitely a test. I never thought about failing. I mean, if I would have bogeyed all the way in, I still would have looked at it as I tried my hardest. That's all I can do. Sometimes that's all you got. Even if I would have lost or I guess you could say it choked it away. I mean, I tried my hardest just to make par and kind of right the ship. But I never once thought about it. I always felt like once I had the lead, it was, you know, he's got to make one more birdie and I've got to make a bogey for this thing to kind of switch. And
it certainly didn't happen. He's just so rock solid, Jay. This is the fourth major now that I've been up close and personal to him. And I got to be candid. Every time I come away from a major experience with him, I'm more convinced that he really is something special.
Well, I pointed out last week how a little taken aback I was by the talking heads on the Golf Channel barking out double-digit majors. I mean, that's silly ground we're talking about. I mean, that's really, essentially, and no offense to Mr. Jones, that's Jack and Tiger, really. I was a little surprised, but look what he did. Look at the performance. And as I said last week, Bob, watching him in that final round in Dallas, just hitting pinpoint iron after pinpoint iron, you could kind of sense. And the thing you wanted and you almost got, if DJ would have played a little better in the opening day, you'd have had these, you know, these bad boys, these big old, you know, big dudes firing at each other on Bethpage Flat. And the one thing that I wonder is 200 years from now, when some golf geek and his son are looking at a record book and they're going to look at Brooks Koepka at 8 under par and Dustin Johnson at 6 and go, wow, that must have been a hell of a tournament. That must have been those two fighting the whole way. And it really wasn't like that, as we said at the beginning. I mean, this, in a way, for 64 holes was a cakewalk.
No, you're right on the money with that observation, Jay. The thing that amazes me too is, if Brooks, if you were to ask him, does he have a friend on the PGA Tour? It would be DJ, but you know he's not known to have a whole clique of guys, and he's not part of that crowd. But he is close to DJ. They work out together in the same gym. And I got to start to believe that Joey D, his trainer, who used to be the trainer for Vijay Singh, is on to something. I mean, one trainer training the first-place finisher and the second-place finisher in a major championship, that's pretty heady stuff. And the guy that finished second, here's what he had to say after his round.
I'm very pleased with the way I played. I feel like my game's been pretty good all year. This week especially, I felt like I really, really played well tee to green. The first 3 days I didn't make enough putts. I hit the ball plenty good enough to been, tied with Brooks going into Sunday. I just didn't make enough putts. Today I felt like I rolled the putter a lot better, in these tough conditions, tough wind, even the putts that I missed, looked like they were going in. Hit the ball really well again today too. So I'm pleased with where the game's at. Especially we got a, still got a lot of big tournaments left this year. So I'm very happy with that.
I think Dustin Johnson, getting a little tired of his buddy winning these majors.
Well, somebody's going to have to step up. I mean, the Tiger thing was what the Tiger thing was. But, I mean, you look at Koepka almost won the Masters. I should say almost. He had a chance. somebody's going to have to step up. I mean, that doesn't mean that Brooks Koepka is going to win the U.S. Open or be in the top five going into Sunday, but overall, he set the bar. I mean, when you look at him and you look at Rory and you look at Jordan Spieth and whoever else you want to throw in there, but as you look at the majors, yeah, Rory's got four and Brooks has four. But I think right now the way in which Brooks has won his four and the span he's wanted him in and the fact he won't turn 30, I think until right before the British Open or right after the British Open, I got to put him at the top of the list post Tiger Phil.
You're solid there, Jay. And I actually had the feeling that had you been at Bethpage, we would have made an effort together to go down to that 18th hole, 72nd hole, and put our arms around Harold Varner the third, because when he teed off, had he stayed in that position, he'd have won $1.2 million, and he ended up with $50,000. So he felt like you and I felt sometimes leaving Las Vegas. He went through $1,150,000. Man, that's a lot of money.
Well, and HV3 continues to improve. He's got a St. Louis and Ray Farney on his bag. And, you know, he also, a lot of people don't realize, he birdied the first hole that day en route to what he shot. Hopefully a great learning experience. I was rooting for him, but
yeah, he really was. Somebody that played well, as you know, cover a lot of golf for the European connection that I have, and Englishman Matt Wallace. His name keeps appearing on leaderboards. I think it's going to be a race to see who wins a major first, whether it's going to be Tommy Fleetwood or this tough Englishman named Matt Wallace. And that was a new personal best for him at Bethpage Black, and he was happy after his round.
I wanted to finish second. If Brooks was going to be the eventual winner, I wanted to finish second. So I'm not too far away from that. I wanted to do everything in my power that I could, and that was control my emotions and stick to my game plan. And I felt like I did that. Those last few holes, I dug really deep because I didn't hardly hit any greens in regulation, so I was having to get up and down from 60 yards, 70 yards. So very happy with that, and a nice putt from about 4 foot on the last there. I mean, to finish behind Brooks and DJ in what is my sixth or seventh major, that's pretty good. And there's plenty more things that I want to accomplish, and hopefully I can do that in a couple of weeks' time. But put myself in these positions more and more, and I'll learn, and I'm learning fast. So in the space of 5 years or so, I've gone from absolutely nothing to finishing third at a major, so that's quite nice.
Yeah, he's a pretty good guy too, Jay, and he's right. He's climbing up that ladder.
I like watching him play. He looks like he's having fun. And I, you know, sometimes the guys get so darn serious, you wonder if they're even enjoying what they're doing. He shows a lot of life on the golf course, which I like seeing.
And I want to run this up your flagpole there, Jay. A couple of guys, they finished in the top 10, but I don't know if they're coming away from Bethpage satisfied with their performance. Let's begin with a guy that finished tied for eighth, Rory McIlroy. Seemed to really have his struggles most of the week.
Well, the one thing, and I was just looking, you know, the low guy over the final 36 was Shane Lowry at 137. McIlroy and DJ both shot 69-69 over the weekend, which tied for second low. Again, the questions will continue as it relates to Rory being able to finish or put himself in position to have a chance to finish. I'm still pointing towards, as I said on Sunday night, I mean, I guess my St. Louis Blues have made the Stanley Cup for the first time in 49 years. So why couldn't we have Tiger Woods win at the Masters, Brooks Koepka at the PGA, Phil Mickelson get the Grand Slam at Pebble, and Rory McIlroy win in Northern Ireland?
Because that's Hollywood stuff. That's Hollywood, my man.
Well, we got two of them. The sequel worked this time. I wonder if we can get another two sequels.
Well, another guy I want to mention certainly played better than he has in the past, but I don't know if he's looking up at that mountain of Brooks Koepka, Mount Koepka, and saying, I don't know if I can climb that mountain, and that's Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, you know, I think the good thing about this for Jordan was he did play four solid rounds. You know, there on this type of golf course, 72 is still a solid round. I mean, there weren't any 75s or 76s, which if you'd been kind of tracking him, you could certainly see at a venue like this. I think he's got to take some positives away. He's playing this week, and we'll talk about that at the end of the show. The field that's going to be gathering at Colonial. As somebody who's kind of been watching him, Bob, as you know, I got to take this as a positive.
Well, I'm glad you are. I think he did walk away there feeling a little bit better about himself. And now there was a guy from Thailand. I know you were a big fan of his. Jazz was his first name. I can't quite remember that last name. Jay, do you remember that?
Jazz Janawanadu. I mean, Bob, there were two guys. There are two guys that I never heard of in my life, and I'm sick. I follow these junior golfers, and I didn't know Jazz and this Mike Lorenzo Vera. He sounds like he'd be a singer somewhere at an Italian restaurant, but he's from France, and I never heard of him, but they both finished in the top 20. Good for them.
Well, that would be an unusual combination of Frenchmen singing in an Italian restaurant that serves Chinese food. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to pause. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, a very special guest, Jay, had the opportunity to catch up with Warren Botke. You probably don't know his name, but he is the head professional down at PGA National, and he was the guy that got Brooks Koepka started in the world of golf when he was just 10 years old. Fascinating stuff coming up from Botke when we return.
You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker, Alexa, and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at the Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. Well, we've gone over the 101st PGA Championship at Bethpage Black. Let's remind people that the man who really taught and took Brooks Koepka under his wing, Warren Botke, a master professional, had the chance to catch up with Bob at Bethpage.
Warren Botke, he's the head professional down at PGA National, but there's a little more to the story. He's the one that kind of brought along Brooks Koepka at a very young age. I'm hearing, what, 10 years old?
Yeah, about 10 and a half, and I worked with him up to almost 18.
How quick did you recognize that you may have something here that a little bit special?
Well, you know, the first couple of years were very informative, and, you know, it was one of those situations where I knew after the first 2-3 years it was going to be something that was going to happen, and so it was awesome in the way that he was there, and I, you know, the first 10, 11 years old, 12 years old, the kids are having fun, you're trying to instill some fundamentals, and after that, around 14, I could start the questions he was asking, was trying to get him off the driving range at dark. It was very difficult. And having all that being said, I could see the needle was moving in the right direction. And at the age of those young ages, we're trying to build their motor program, their motor skills by running and jumping and skipping and hopping and trying to get their athleticism going. And that kind of gave him a head start to where he is today.
A lot of people in the media were having a little trouble come to grasp with actually what Brooks is accomplishing. I mean, it is so unbelievable. Probably going to go on to win the PGA. I'll tell people we're interviewing before the start of the fourth and final round, but he leads by 7 shots. He then is going to have as many majors as Rory McIlroy, as many majors as Ernie Els. I mean, saying those names, and more majors than Jordan Spieth.
Correct. Yeah, no, it's hard to wrap your arms around it. It's one of those situations where, you know, I didn't see it coming this quickly. And now he has so much momentum. It's going to be a situation, Bob, where, you know, he's talking about 10 majors. And I think that's achievable.
You know, one thing he does that I haven't seen in other players, Warren, is if he's putting well, he's quick to tell the media, well, look, I'm putting well right now, so I fully expect to make just about every 8 to 10 footer that I look at. Players in the past, the tradition was they never wanted to say they were putting well because they felt they would jinx themselves. But he seems immune to that.
Yeah, he's always been a great putter. A little quick story, when he was 13, you'll see now his routine the way it is. We had been at the golf course and they aerified the greens and they put a light coating of sand. And I had told him, I said, every time you go out to putt, please make sure that that club face is clean and wipe it off. And now when you go ahead and see him, he takes 3 practice strokes, wipes it, puts it down, looks at the hole and strokes it. And he's always been a great putter. And he always uses that as his crutch and his backup, because he knows he has a lot of confidence in him. He makes a lot of 5 and 6 and 7 footers for saves, for birdies, and it's just been incredible the way he putts.
Warren Bakke is my special guest here, early coach for Brooks Koepka. There's a lot of criticism, I think unjustified, in the media that he's rather aloof and, you know, doesn't seem to warm up to people. But deep down inside, the limited time I've gotten to know him, he's really a nice, nice guy.
He's a great young man. He's such a gentleman. It's kind of the kid you'd want to take home for your parents. I mean, he's so authentic. He's very transparent. You see what you get. There's no hidden agenda. And you know, being around him for those formative years, I taught him some life stories. There were many conversations we had that he would talk to me on confidence and not his parents. And that's the whole thing about being a coach, is there's a trust factor. And last year, I wasn't able to be at Belrive. He gave me a shout out and told him if it wasn't for me, he wouldn't be here today. And I mean, it brought tears to my eyes because I didn't know how much I meant to him until he said that. I knew I meant a lot to him, but that really buckled my knees. And to see him every time I see him, he just gives me a hug, and we just have such a special relationship, and it's just so great that, you know, I did my job as a golf instructor and coached him, and he owes me nothing, but he keeps telling me I can't thank you enough, and it's hard to receive that because I did my job, and you don't need to keep thanking me, but that's the kind of person he is.
Well, that's the medal of a true PGA club professional. They are the unsung heroes in the sport of golf. No questions asked about that. One last thing before I let you go. I have often said that choosing to go to Europe and hone his skills was a valuable segment in his maturity. You agree?
Yeah, totally agree. I think that really helped him a lot to grow up. And there was a time and a juncture there. He was there that first year, 9 months into it, where he called and he was going to call it quits. I mean, it was just too tough, you know, going through that. But the nice thing of it, he gutted it out. We were going to finish the race. This is what we set out to do. You told me you were going to play in the Masters. We did, and let's get it done. And he finished, and he persevered. He's got a lot of resilience, and that's what makes him the character he is.
Well, he's a lovely addition to golf. I regard him as a true ambassador. Like I respect the work that you do, teaching people to play this sport. It lasts them a lifetime, and I don't think anybody can give a better gift than giving something that you can use for a lifetime. Been a pleasure to talk to you in person. I really now have a little more insight into why Brooks is the great player that he is. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Great to hear Bob with PGA Master Professional, Warren Bakke. Well, we all know that Alex Maselli has an opinion on everything. After the break, we're going to find out what he thought about the 101st PGA Championship and take a look towards next week and the Colonial.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Well, Jay, we got to get to Alex because he's bursting with pride because of his prediction last week at the PGA Championship, although it was more like picking one horse in a one-horse race. But nevertheless, we'll give him credit. He's the founder and publisher of Morning Read. His name needs no mention. We'll do it anyway. Alex Maselli joining us. He's at the senior PGA. But let's talk about the PGA Championship. Your prediction of Brooks Koepka came through, got a little hairy, I guess, on Sunday, Alex, but overall, he certainly dominated.
Hey, he was just indifferent on Sunday, Bob. No reason to force the issue until somebody knocked on the door. I mean, when you shoot 63-65, you're kind of cruising at the rest of the 36 holes. I just think he got a little defensive, and obviously when he had to step it up, he stepped it up, so never a concern.
Alex, I had an opportunity to talk with Kerry Hague, and I asked him prior to the start of the championship, did he see a 63 on Bethpage Black? And he said, Bob, due to the rain, due to the lack of wind, due to the soft greens, due to the soft fairways where balls were not rolling into the rough, and you have the best players in the world, that's where the 63 came from. You agree with the assessment?
No, I don't agree. Because if you talk to any player that was wandering around Bethpage before the tournament started, there's no way they saw a 63 out there. They were all talking about how they were looking at maybe 5, 6, 7 under winning the tournament. I mean, the guy shot 7 under the first day. So, no, I mean, it just shows you how good Brooks Koepka was. I think you're being disingenuous to suggest that the weather or this or that was the reason why the guy shot the 63. It's not. It's just he was so good comparatively to everybody else.
So, of course, you know, it's quite obvious the amount of talent he has to play the game. I mean, you don't win four of the last eight majors that he's participated in, Alex. But then that brings up the bigger question. How does this dominance in majors not transfer over to regular PGA Tour events?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. His interest level isn't the same. I mean, we have all talked about how majors are the biggest thing. They're the World Golf Championships, the Players' Championship, normal tour events, they're comparatively, they are nothing compared to the majors. That's what we've always said. So here's somebody that actually believes that, who actually subscribes to the fact that majors are big things and the rest of them aren't. And he realizes that he can get up four times a year, focused and stay focused for four times a year. And the win there is certainly bigger to him than the wins at the other events. So that, I think, to me, that is the reason why.
Well, in appreciation of you picking Brooks Koepka, I'm going to tee you up on one that I know you love. The Tiger Woods we saw at the PGA, the Tiger Woods we saw at the Masters, which is closer to being the real Tiger Woods in 2019?
Well, I think it's going to be more towards the PGA. I do think he's certainly going to show up better than he did at the PGA. I think I was surprised that he didn't make the cut. But to suggest that he has the game to compete week in and week out against a Brooks Koepka, you'd have to be smoking something that was probably illegal, because there's no way in the world he has that kind of game anymore.
Yeah, well, that goes for a lot of people, that's for sure. We appreciate your time. I know you're busy, but before we let you go, I know you're on scene for the senior PGA. How's that being set up, and you're looking forward to a good senior PGA championship?
Yeah, I think it will be good. I mean, Kerry Haig, who sets up these venues for the PGA of America, said his first time here at Oak Hill was 1995, which is actually my first time at Oak Hill when we had a Ryder Cup here. But I think, you know, at this time of year, they don't have that much growing going on, but when it starts growing, it grows fast. So that means you're getting thick, rough, thick like you had at Bethpage last week. This golf course has had a lot of championships, so they know what to do in the spring, and it's a difficult test for the seniors. I think this is one of the more difficult venues for the seniors to have, and it wouldn't surprise me 2-3-4 under ended up winning this championship.
Who's going to win?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, there's so many good players out here. I mean, Bernhard Langer you would think would be the guy, but I think this is a difficult course for him in a lot of ways. I look at, you know, Stricker is here. Stricker won the first senior major 2 weeks ago at the Regions event. I think Stricker plays these type of golf courses very well, a real U.S. Open type setup. So I like Stricker here this week.
Well, you like Koepka, and he came through. We'll see how you make out with Stricker. Thanks again for your time, Alex. I know you're busy. We appreciate you here in the Grill Room. Alex Maselli, founder, publisher of Morning Read.
Bob, always good to hear from Alex. He didn't have to worry about Tiger at Bethpage. We'll see about how Tiger and the rest of the folks do. As pretty soon we'll already be starting to talk about the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach.
Yeah, I mean, two down, two to go, and you know that U.S. Open is going to be on our radar sooner than you can imagine. But I think what we should do now, Jay, a very important stop on the PGA Tour, now called the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial. It's played at the famed Colonial Country Club, one of Hogan's Alleys, and always great when they play at Hogan's Alley, Jay, and pretty good field, you know, coming on the heels of a major championship, and I think that has a lot to do with the quality of Colonial and the great work those people have done there for many, many years. Happy to see they got some studs in the field.
It's one of my favorite golf courses, an old school, great design. Yeah, Bob, I mean, you got Ricky Fowler, Bryson DeChambeau, who missed the cut at Bethpage, and Max Homa are paired together. You got Spieth, Kevin Kisner, and Texan Ryan Palmer. John Rahm is playing, Xander Schauffele, Justin Rose, along with Francesco Molinari and Brant Snedeker. Rose torched Colonial last year when he won by three I mean, that's lighting it up at that place. And unfortunately, this is one of those golf courses, Bob, that, you know, just doesn't have the distance. And it doesn't. There's no room. You can't go anywhere. You can't make it longer. But it's still just an awesome spot. And I know we both love that that tremendous room that they have there at Colonial.
Yeah, and when you have the opportunity to go see Ben Hogan's locker, it literally takes your breath away. Certainly an ideal golf course, Jay, for Kevin Kisner with his pinpoint accuracy and not being overly long. He captured the title here a couple of years ago, and looking for a big week again. And somebody else I want to mention real quick before we run out of time, Jay. One of my favorites, Boo Weekly, former winner at Colonial, currently in a little battle with cancer, but it seems to be under control. He's playing, and he was asked, you know, what he hopes to accomplish, and he said, "I just want to play good golf." And hats off to Boo Weekly and his battle. Certainly one of the more colorful guys ever to play on the PGA Tour.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.